So you're getting ready to come to Portsmouth May 31st.
Yeah.
Have you been to New Hampshire before?
Probably. I would imagine I have. I think back in the 80s sometime, I think I was there. Yeah. Maybe only once, though.
Right. Well, no, you know, again, like with all the places you've traveled, I'm sure, you know, you probably flew over New Hampshire at one point.
Oh, many times, I'm sure. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, a friend of mine lives there, who's kind of the catalyst of me doing this show there.
Oh, excellent.
Bob Graham. He's lived there. He used to be on the road with me back in the, well, actually, late 70s. He was my drum tech for quite a few years. So, and now I've brought him out of retirement, and he's working with Protocol now. He helped put this one together.
That's awesome. It's a great way to get you to come here, basically, right? Is he going to drum tech for you on the 31st?
Yes, he is.
Oh, get out. That's awesome.
Yeah. It's so cool. It really is. You know, to have someone that, you know, I've known for so long. And, you know, he got out of the business for a while. And then he retired. And then he wanted to come out on the road. I went, fine. So be it.
Right? You're like, I can find something for you to do. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's loving it. He's really digging. The thing is, most importantly, he loves the music. So that's why he does it. He always did. He was a big, you know, big jazz and big fusion fan for many years. So, you know, it's great. I love it.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, speaking of, as I always loved the music, I think you have too. I mean, I think you've played with almost every single one of my favorite artists over time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's just, I mean, is there anyone that you haven't played with yet that you wish you could?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's funny because all the people I will mention, I have known for a while and have probably just sat in on a jam here and there. Like, for example, Herbie Hancock, I played with him a couple of times and he wanted me to do a tour with him, but I wasn't available to do that. Chick Corea, we've done some recording, but literally that, you know, one track. John McLaughlin, who is somebody I've always wanted to play with because I've loved his music for so many years. We finally got to play together in Mumbai at a performance I was doing there for a wonderful Indian musician called Zakir Hussain. It was for his father's memorial concert. And McLaughlin was over there playing with Shakti. So we finally got to at least jam together, but these are all people I would love to actually play music with and do a short tour with. You know, would be absolutely fantastic. So, yeah, there's still a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, and you've got plenty of time, I would say.
Well, I hope so.
Well, I feel like, you know, just sort of, you know, dialing into your story a little bit. I mean, I feel like you sort of were born playing the drums.
Yeah, I was. Absolutely, yeah.
You know, I mean, you got your start so young playing with your dad, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, it was kind of unavoidable. I mean, you know, he was a band leader, and he used to rehearse the band at the house. So really, from the ages of nothing till about 3 and a half, I had been in and out of a few studios, and I'd seen the band, but nothing really registered yet in terms of an instrument. I was bumping into baritone saxes and trombones and all that kind of stuff, nice, shiny brass instruments. But it wasn't until one day in probably 1960, my dad was rehearsing the band, and he decided to, instead of cramming them all into this smaller room, which was called it was like a conservatory, he obviously must have done some very deep negotiations with my mother, and managed to let the band actually come into the main living room, which is where the piano was. So the first instrument that I would see when I walked in was the drum kit. And not only that, he also got a new drummer, a young drummer, and it's all his fault, basically. His name is Dave Rogers, or was, he passed away. But it was all down to him for my career, basically. Last year, on our European tour with Protocol, we played two nights at Ronnie Scott's in London. And one of the people that came to that concert, which was, this was really amazing, was that drummer's wife and his kids.
Oh.
Who were all grown up.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. No, you have to love full
Absolutely
circle
amazing.
Moments like that.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Protocol for a second. I mean, this is a 30-year-long project at this point.
I guess it is, yeah. Yeah, I mean, the first album was, I recorded in 1988. And I, you know, came up with that name. And, yeah, and then I resurrected the name in 2013. When I put a band together and we started recording, we made Protocol 2, and it just seemed to stick. So, yeah, we kind of revisited it, and there it is. Absolutely, yeah.
It's your reaction was great. It's like sort of like, wow, it really has been 30 years.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't even think about that. I remember the 25-year mark. I'd forgotten the other 5 years.
You've been so busy producing music, right?
Yeah, it has been very busy. It's been amazing, yeah.
So tell me a little bit about what it was like to sort of transition from doing, you know, you were playing the drums and doing all of that, and then you sort of got into the whole, you know, producing realm of it. Like, what was that transition like for you?
It was actually pretty easy because I grew up surrounded by recording equipment. My dad would take me to BBC broadcasts from when I was 6 years. Well, actually before, but he would, I would start writing with him without my mom, maybe from six onwards. And I'd just sit there next to the drummer and watch the session. So in terms of studio etiquette, I learned that very quickly. In other words, I didn't have a whole bag of sticky sweeties with wrappers, which I would start undoing right in the middle of a take, you know, that kind of stuff. I learned that you don't make a sound, you don't cough, you don't, you know, because the mic's alive and they're recording. And so in terms of, you know, the studio etiquette and the vibe and how a studio works, kind of in that respect, I got that very, very early on. But the other thing was my mom was kind of an amateur recordist and archivist. She had some pretty nice equipment. Eventually, she had a couple of Revox G36 quarter-inch machines. And I learned how to use these. I learned how to record. I learned how to kind of bounce from one machine to another. So I was already pretty technically adept with very simple recording gear. And the other thing was I was just so into sound, even then. I used to love the sound of certain records. I would even buy a record just purely because I love the sound of it, regardless of the music, you know?
Yeah.
And I'd always think, how do they get that snare drum sound, you know, or how do you get that brass sound or something, you know, that so it was all that stuff. So it was kind of a twofold thing. One of it was from a musician's point of view, but the other part was from a recording point of view. And by the time I started doing production, of course, I'd made many albums. I was doing, you know, I was a London session guy from 16 years old onwards.
Right. I mean, this was before the Toto years, before the Protocol,
Oh, yeah. Wait, but we're talking about 70s, you know. I started recording with my dad in 1971 and then started in terms of, you know, being booked for sessions really from 1973 onwards. So by 76, I'd already played on a bunch of records because in those days, there was so much recording going on. And, you know, in 1976, I was doing three sessions a day, pretty much most days. So at three different studios, you know, it was a lot of recording. And I was just fascinated why would my drum kit sound a certain way in one place, but then totally different in another place? And then I started learning about all the different consoles, speakers, and tape machines, microphones. And I watched the engineers very closely. I used to watch the BU meters and just figure out how it all works. It was a fascination, you know.
And
then I wanted to get my own studio from 76, actually. That didn't happen until much later. But so I'd always wanted to get that side of the glass, as it were. And my opportunity from a professional point of view, I did a little bit messing around, you know, but was when I worked with Mike Oldfield in 1983 on an album called Crises. And I went and did the drum tracks, and we got on very well. And he noticed I was very technically adept in terms of, you know, getting all my drum sounds and all that kind of stuff. And we had a phone call, and he said, how would you feel about coming to co-produce me? And I went, great, you know. So then I hired an engineer, and he had a Neve console there, 8108. And within that first day, he fired the engineer and came in with the manual for the console and plonked it on my lap and said, I'll be back in about 3 hours. And that was it. That was my jump in the deep end of engineering.
Right. Oh, my gosh.
He gave me that opportunity, and I learned so much from Mike. It was amazing. I mixed most of that album. I'd never mixed an album before.
Wow. I love how, you know, it all just came about of everything that you've been exposed to over time, you know, and you were able to sort of piece it all together and do all these amazing projects that you've done over the years. I love that.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's been fantastic. And, you know, what's really interesting is that this year, for example, we were on the road till about February the 9th. I think I came back to L.A. And then the last couple of months, I've actually been a recording engineer. I've mixed two albums. I haven't touched a drum kit.
Right. And you're getting ready to head to a drum festival next week, aren't you? Or the week after, somewhere around there?
Yeah. in Paderborn, Germany. I know. It's kind of cool kind of having two jobs, really. It's been very helpful because these days, you know, things are very different. There's not a lot of recording going on. And from a live point of view, you know, most of the stuff I do now is either protocol or, for example, I'm going to Japan with Mike Stern in June. It's kind of, I think all musicians are kind of experiencing, you know, a little more of a lack of work, basically. You know, it just wasn't like it was. So you have to be very industrious and kind of make your own work, as it were. So from that point of view, I'm very lucky that I do have another job, which is engineering. And even though recording budgets are very low and far and few between, there still seems to be enough people that want to make a record and give me a call and say, hey, you know, would you mix this record? And I'd listen to it. And I go, yeah, okay, you know, we might need to do some work on this, but absolutely, you know. So that's fun.
Yeah, I'm, you know, it's fascinating to me, and I'm sure even more so for you, you know, given the amount of time that you've been playing music and producing music and touring and you know, doing the whole thing, really, how the industry has changed. And in fact, I was talking to oh my gosh, I can't remember who it was, but just saying that, you know, you're seeing a lot of people go back to touring now, and you're seeing a lot of bands doing revival tours because the industry has changed so much.
Oh, yeah. I mean, everybody's out on the road, and now the road is getting oversubscribed, so it becomes even harder to book a tour, and it's become very tricky, even booking protocol, you know? I mean, we're supposed to be out in the States doing shows, and then we're going over to Europe. But it's been very, very difficult to you know, hook those tours up and book a decent amount of gigs. So it's actually worth going over that, you know? It's an interesting time. It's a tough time.
Yeah, I mean, it seems everybody's so, it's like craft beer. Everyone's doing it in their garage.
Yeah.
Not you, you know, per se, but.
Well, there are good things about that, and then there's not so good things about that. You know, it really, the industry has become, I mean, I'm calling it, I don't even call it the music business anymore. I call it the entertainment business, because that's kind of what it is. And it's also become a cottage industry, especially recording. You know, there are some really cool, there is some really cool music out there. There's some stuff that's happening, which is like, wow, you know, which probably would never have got heard in the traditional sense of, you know, record company and A&R department. And, you know, you'd end up on a demo tape, would end up on someone's desk. And if it didn't make the cassette machine that morning, it would end up in the trash, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the good side of the YouTube and, you know, everybody kind of having a go at it. The problem, of course, is the revenue.
Right.
And as you're trying to make a living. So it's kind of become, as I say, a cottage industry and almost a semi-professional industry. You know, most people in it are not even professionals because they have to do something else to survive, you know, to survive, basically. So it's a you know, interesting time we have right now.
Yeah, no, I would totally agree. And I will say I'm super glad you're still playing and booking tours and, you know, bringing your music out to everybody. And I'm especially excited that you're coming to Portsmouth. So I'll give Bob a thanks to that. And I'll make sure he's minding his P's and Q's on the 31st and paying attention to everything that you need.
Oh, yes, he will. And I really hope, you know, people... I think this venue hasn't really had an act like this before. So, you know, this is kind of a little bit new kind of jazz. It's jazz or jazz fusion. It really is a fusion of jazz and rock. You've got, you know, a lot of rock and roll elements and a lot of jazz elements. I really hope people will come out and give it a try, you know, give it a listen, because the band is phenomenal. It really is, you know.
Simon Phillips with Protocol coming to 3S Art Space May 31st. The show starts at 8 p.m. You can get your tickets online right now, and I highly suggest you check it out. Simon, thank you so much for this conversation. It's been absolutely awesome.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you.